Born to broadcast, television news anchor, radio news anchor. This lady knows Lansing and is about to let you in on the latest. 1320 WILS presents Cheryl Fritz, your host for Fritz and Friends.
Good evening and welcome to Fritz and Friends on this Tuesday evening. 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. I'm Cheryl Fritz along with Scott Eckersley producing. We're going to go right out on the phone this evening to Detective Sergeant Ingrid Dean with the Michigan State Police in Traverse City. Good evening, Detective Sergeant. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Can I call you Ingrid?
Absolutely.
Okay. You earned those titles, so I didn't want to step on those. You have quite a many facets to your work. Over 20 years a police veteran, could you give us a little bit of your background at first?
Sure. In 1989, I graduated from Wayne State University. I decided to join the Michigan State Police and become a patrol trooper. Went through the recruit school, was posted in Traverse City, Michigan for 6 years on road patrol, and then was promoted to polygraph examiner at the Grayling Crime Laboratory. I went through quite a bit of training with the Texas Department of Public Safety for polygraph. It consisted of about 3 months of training, and then went through a 2-year internship program and conducted polygraph for 12 years out of the forensic crime lab system. I decided to become a field detective in about 2005 and have been working at the Traverse City Post ever since.
Well, you talking about having gone through trooper school, the 122nd recruit school is going on right now here in Lansing, so you know exactly what they're going through, don't you?
Yes, but I'm so happy for them. They're just going to have a wonderful career. They're going through a lot of pain right now, but it's well worth it.
Well, and your experiences are telling us that. One of the things that caught my eye was an article that I saw from the Traverse City area that talked about your work as a forensic artist, and I wondered how that part of your training came to be.
It was about 1991 when we first formed a forensic art unit department. I happened to obtain a degree at Wayne State in art. A BA, and I never would have thought that we would have ever had a forensic art unit. But when it opened up, I applied and was chosen among 6 other artists as well.
Well, the whole idea of being a forensic artist has always fascinated me, and what's involved from both ends, from your end as an artist and being able to listen to things people may not even really know that they're telling you, to be able to put the pieces all together. I imagine over time you've learned to some incredible listening skills.
Yes, and that really goes for all 8 of us that are in the unit now. I think both our art and our police knowledge together contribute to the success that we have in our unit. We do composite drawings, age progression, fugitive updates, facial reconstruction work. So there's a lot of little aspects to our job, and they all involve different skills. But interviewing is probably the most important in addition to our art skills, because in order to get that information from the victims or the witnesses that are trying to describe someone, you know, after a traumatic situation, it takes practice.
Well, and so many of your skills in police training, I'm guessing, would have to come into play, as you just said, after a traumatic or dramatic event. First, well, you need the information quickly and a description quickly, but you also need to be able to calm them down so that you can communicate.
That's right. And you have to gain their trust. And in that, it takes practice. It takes some open-mindedness. You know, many listeners out there or people, you know, that watch these television shows sometimes have that stereotypical image of us as being hard-lined and just the facts. But as an artist, you really have to look at the whole picture, use your intuition. You know, it's a softer approach.
And I would guess also you're always surprised, or I guess I'm surprised sometimes when I see drawings, and there's always a couple of features when you see these sketches that stick out, and that can be what tips somebody off, isn't it?
Sure. If there's just one feature that sticks out on a person, such as their eyes, or maybe it's the shape of their face, or the way they tilt their head, sometimes just that one part of that person is enough.
And I'm guessing also people are, of course, are so different. How observant they are can vary as widely as the number of people that you talk to.
Yes, that really does vary. And, you know, depending on the trauma that's involved has a lot to do with whether a person will remember or not, you know, how important that contact or that event was to the person. If it's, you know, if you're just passing by a person and there's nothing significant about, you know, passing by that person, when you look at them, you're probably not going to remember them. But if they have a gun in your face, or, you know, it's a particularly stressful situation, I think we pick up more information. It's more important to us.
And I imagine your questioning has to pull out of them what they may not even think that they remember. So I'm sure your training and guidance in this area pulls information from them that they probably thought they had forgotten or maybe never knew.
That's right. We use what's called a cognitive interviewing approach, which are open-ended questions. They're not yes and no questions like, did he have brown eyes, or did he have thick lips? They're questions more like, tell me what you remember about that face. What did you see that was most significant about that person? Those kinds of questions will gather much more information than a question like, did he do it? Mm-hmm. Yes or no? Did he point a gun at you? Those are very closed-ended questions. And in our work as forensic artists, we ask questions that will gather the most information.
And these sketches, of course, are used, they're done quickly, and then they are used to try to help develop leads to pass out to folks and so that officers out in the field have something to show folks.
Yes, they're a tool, and they can be used in many ways. Some officers will give it to the media, and they'll put it on television or in the newspapers, and other times they'll keep it to themselves. It depends on the gravity of the situation. Every case is different. I know recently one of our artists did a fabulous job with a picture on the serial stabber out of Flint, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Trooper Sarah Foster, and it made headlines and really got out there and spread all over the country. And that was a really special case in which we were able to apprehend the subject based on that picture and other factors.
Well, are the folks who give you these descriptions sometimes surprised at how close you come when they get it and they say, yeah, that's him or her?
Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes even when I draw a picture, I don't think it's very good. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I gathered enough information, and then surprise, somebody picks that picture right out and says, that is so-and-so.
Well,
and you just wonder.
And that kind of leads into where we're going to go next. You are an author of a book called The Spirit of the Badge, 60 True Police Stories of Divine Guidance, Miracles, Intuition. And you're using a lot of that gut instinct and just feelings when you're working with the art.
Yes, and police officers do it in their normal work as well. And I think this is an area that people outside of law enforcement don't necessarily understand. Again, they sometimes think that we're just the facts, that we're sort of hard-lined in our work, but really we integrate not just facts and evidence, but our own wisdom and intuition. We use our own experience sometimes to stay alive.
Absolutely. If you can stay with us, Ingrid, I would love that, because I want to come back and talk about the book and this collection of stories and experiences of fellow officers.
Sure.
Will do. We'll be back with more in just a bit with Detective Sergeant Ingrid Dean with the Michigan State Police in Traverse City. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends.
You're listening to Fritz and Friends on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome back to Fritz and Friends. Still on the line with us, Detective Sergeant Ingrid Dean with the Michigan State Police. And, of course, we're coming to you on 1320 WILS. Welcome back, Ingrid.
Yes.
We started on when we left at the break to talk about a book that you have written called Spirit of the Badge. I was interested in reading a little background of how this book came about. You were working on a master's degree.
Yes. I decided to go back to school and obtain a degree in transpersonal psychology, which has to do with people's exceptional human experiences. And in all my years as a police officer and the contact that I've had with fellow officers, we have a lot of great stories out there that the public never sees. And so it was my idea to do my culminating project as a book and to try to compile these stories about our exceptional experiences.
And what you touched on a little bit, but what makes these experiences and stories different from ones we may have heard about?
Well, these stories are about premonitions, what people might consider divine intervention. You know, many of us do utilize our dreams as warnings and look at the symbols and integrate that into our work. You know, of course, facts and evidence is very important, but there's also our intuitive side and our intuitive insights that also influence our job and the decisions that we make.
Well, the intuitive side, I guess I put in layman's terms kind of that gut instinct. We all have it. Some of us just tend to ignore it a lot of the time, and we look back and say, I knew there was something wrong. Is that part of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. And I believe in that gut instinct, and I believe it's even taught in recruit school. Don't ignore it. It can keep you safe when you listen to yourself. Gut instinct is a very important word in our vocabulary in law enforcement.
And I loved some of the writing on this. Talks about the gut instinct and or the divine guidance, and police are sometimes able to make life-saving decisions at a crucial moment. And so the training of paying attention to that gut instinct and being able to react and having to react right now both play together, don't they?
Absolutely.
So do you have some stories that come to mind when, not necessarily favorites, because I imagine these are kind of like your children, the stories in this book, but some that stick out to you that people might enjoy?
Sure. There's one story that comes to mind right away, and it's about two Detroit police officers who make this routine traffic stop in Detroit, and seconds later, before they know it, all of these bullets from an Uzi-style submachine gun come screaming into the vehicle. The bullets pierce the hood and the doors, and they shatter the windshield, and the police officer behind the wheel is pinned down by the submachine gun fire, and he faces this terrible choice. And it's, do I stay in the squad car and get shot, or do I exit the car and get shot while this Uzi is firing 600 rounds per minute? So the officer opens the door and claims that this golden glow fills the car. And he says, Sergeant Dean, he said, you know, I hear this calm, kind of a male voice in my head that says, don't worry, you're going to come out of this fine, you won't be hurt. And he said it felt as if a shield had been raised up in front of him. So the cop stands there amid this hail of bullets, and he empties his gun into the suspect's vehicle, and then they speed away, and he's completely unharmed. And he says at the end of the story that, you know, I'm alive today because of divine intervention.
Well, and the book is full of stories similar in nature of one kind or another, but similar like that, some no explanation, and yet they occurred.
Yes, and the stories are all so different. They're very extraordinary. In one chapter called Synchronicity, it talks about, you know, situations that you would have never imagined could have happened. For instance, one story called The Lost Badge, where this Ontario officer loses his badge. He gets dispatched to a forest 100 miles north of his main city, I believe it's Toronto, and he's to check out this forest that's been hit by wind shear. And when he gets up there, all these trees are downed, shrubs, part of the forest is totally destroyed, but he sees this eagle's nest in the distance. And so he takes great pains to climb over all the trees to get to this nest just to see if there's any eaglets in it that are still alive that he can take to a refuge. When he gets there, the nest is empty, thank goodness, but he sees something very shiny sticking out in the branches in the nest. And when he pulls it out, it's his badge. I mean, what are the odds of that?
Yeah, there's no explanation.
There isn't.
In story after story like this, where can people find this book, Detective Sergeant?
They can go to my website, spiritofthebadge.com, or they can call 1-800-BOOKLOG. That's the book distributor called Atlas Books. It's 1-800-BOOKLOG, and they could order the book right away.
Very good. And never to sit still very long. You're shipping out this week. We needed to do this interview. You're heading to Iraq.
I am.
And what will you be doing?
I was invited to teach Psychology 101, interviewing and interrogation at a law enforcement polygraph school in Baghdad. And I'm leaving early Thursday morning with my helmet and flak jacket.
And who will you be working with?
I will be working on a U.S. military base, and I'll be teaching Iraqi police officers. It's going to be challenging because they don't speak English, so I have an interpreter for the class, and my whole PowerPoint presentation and paperwork is all in Arabic now. But these are police officers in the National Iraqi Police, and they're learning to become polygraph examiners.
And how long will you be gone, Ingrid?
10 days in February, and I'm going again in April.
Well, we could go on and on with your experiences alone, your life experience and job experience. It sounds like there's another books that should be in the works.
Oh, I don't know. There's so much work. But thank you. It's really a lot of fun. And, I took vacation time from my normal duties as a detective with the state police, but my department supports me. And I just feel it's going to be a great contribution to go out there and teach.
Well, I can imagine for them as well to have someone with your experience and expertise able to help them. The folks, the military police and so forth, the police need help, and your experience will certainly be valuable.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Well, I think we have that. And want to remind everybody again, the book is called Spirit of the Badge. And I don't mind you giving the website one more time.
Oh, it's spiritofthebadge, all one word, .com, or 1-800-BOOKLOG. Since I'm going to be away for a couple weeks, probably that phone number is the best to call.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate your time this evening. I find the things that you do interesting and exciting and valuable information. So I appreciate your time with us this evening.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Detective Sergeant Ingrid Dean with the Michigan State Police, heading out to Iraq to do some teaching and training there on Thursday. We'll wish her well. We will be back with more Fritz and Friends after this. Coming up after the break, Brian Lawson with Crystal Mountain Resort is going to be telling us about things at the mountain this year.